more than that. June 26th of 2002 was the first deadline for discovery for the plaintiff. The defendants immediately filed a motion to dismiss when they didn't receive the discovery on June 26th. By July 1st of 2002, which is 5 days later, the parties appeared in court and the plaintiff tendered written discovery and the defendant withdrew their motion to dismiss. Now this case involves a dismissal for the failure apparently of the plaintiff to prosecute the case. You'll know very little more regarding discovery. Within 6 months of the case, 7 months of the case being filed, written discovery was tendered. After that, a notice of deposition was filed. Now, I would point out, there are two arguments raised by the plaintiff. And the first is that just a denial of due process to dismiss the plaintiff's case, based in part on fabrications on the part of the defendant. Now, I point out in the defendant's response to the plaintiff's brief, there is no response. They only argue the second argument, and that is whether or not it was an abuse of discretion for the district court to dismiss the case.
What if they're already made to the notice of necessity to discuss the rest?
Judge, I believe there are two separate issues. One is a matter of due process wherein an attorney fabricates matters to the court, and the court, unbeknownst to these matters, makes a decision based on that. The second is, if there is a dilatory conduct, assuming arguendo there was, is it proper to dismiss? So I think they're two different bases, and in fact are somewhat intertwined.
How would you get to the first one if you dismissed it because the interview was from the position he's taking to dismiss the case because of dilatory conduct on the part of the plaintiff?
There was no dilatory conduct.
But if we affirm the court on that predicate, why do we get to the first argument you made?
Well, as a matter of this court keeping the matters on the utmost integrity. And it's a matter for this court's judicial police powers, so to speak, to ensure that litigants before the court don't misrepresent matters such that a whole case, that the very basis why we're here in this building exists, and that is to provide litigants remedies. And in this situation, an American citizen was discriminated by a German corporation. His case is bounced for on what reason? Because he had a non-mandatory case? No. Because the defendant's lawyer fabricated and did an excellent job of gamesmanship. I admit it's one of the best jobs I've ever seen. The motion to dismiss filed the day that the discovery was due. It was the beginning of it. It was after it was drawn.
When did he file the discovery?
The plaintiff's discovery was filed July 1st.
It
was
not being due.
I'm sorry, Judge.
And when was it due?
June 26th, 2002. Now, is that a basis for a motion to dismiss? Motion to compel, I think, would be the ordinary.
Well, that's not it, didn't
you? I'm sorry, Judge.
You withdrew that motion.
He didn't withdraw that motion. But I think it's my point to say that he filed it because it wouldn't be granted as the beginning of a process of papering files, so to speak. Because he can point back and say, well, we filed a motion to dismiss back on this date. Look, and whether it's meritorious or not, we will withdraw it. Whenever we get to that issue, is it meritorious? Then he began to paper the file and say, well, on this date we did this, and on this date we did that. But, Judge,
I said, there's some way to avoid that problem, and that was to do it on time.
I'm sorry, Judge?
I said there would have been a simple way to avoid the motion, that was to file the responses on time.
Absolutely, Judge. Absolutely, Judge. And in the litigation, there's no question. And that actually brings me to another point, and the timing involved in these cases. I believe Judge Aspen addressing members of the bar who encouraged federal practitioners to bring discrimination cases. Because Brian Lyons, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in the Northern District, this is Chicago, large corporations battling out their contracts, securities fraud, so forth and so on. But in fact, what we have are David and Goliath when it comes to discrimination cases. Usually federal practitioners are those, and they're up against corporations such as Duke Boris in this case, who have multiple attorneys. On this appeal alone, there's two attorneys filed in this matter on this week. Not to say, so then the question comes, what is the timing?
Well, there was a similar pair of depositions that led to the dismissal, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And I,
well, that has nothing to do with the original. So let's, why did we appear at the deposition?
Because the first deposition, the plaintiff's office called the defendant's office the day before. Several times, calling, saying, you know, are we on? Completely ordinary practice in the practice of law. Are we doing the deposition or not? Because things change. that morning, the attorney...
I'm going to say, Phil, that your notice for the deposition, the plaintiff is supposed to be under the deposition. Why do you have to call and repeatedly nail it down again?
Because it's a matter of saving time. Otherwise, litigants will waste time if they appear, so depositions are continued repeatedly.
Now, that comes to shock me, but some of us have been back to practice law ourselves, and have some kind of an idea of a thing. Well, you're supposed to appear when they're noticed in for a deposition. You don't appear, you're in trouble.
In the future, that probably will be the practice to do. And then it's appear, and then I bet you can file a motion for cost and sanctions, as opposed to calling to make sure you guys are ready. I'd like to point out, on that first deposition, the J.R.
How many times have you missed the deposition?
The defense was arguing that he missed it twice, but there's gamesmanship being played here that I think on the parent on first glance. Yeah, we filed a notice of deposition. I'm in my rebuttal, and I would like to take some of that time for rebuttal.
Brian McCarthy. I represent Deutsche Börse AG and Deutsche Börse Systems Incorporated, defendants below and appellees here. We're asking the court to affirm Judge Hart's dismissal in the district court. The facts that were laid out by Mr. Epstein require some explanation, and the facts that are relevant here are not the substantive merits of this case. They are the procedural steps that took place in the district court. Mr. Alston failed to meet deadlines in this case. He failed to meet a deadline to file his amended complaint. He failed to meet a deadline to respond to a motion to dismiss. He failed to meet deadlines to answer written discovery. He failed to obey Judge Hart's orders. Those orders were May 1st and June 12th, 2002. Mr. Alston failed to attend various status hearings and failed to attend, in fact, his own noticed motions before Judge Hart. Those were June 5th, June 12th, August 15th, October 23rd, and November 27th, 2002. Lastly, and most importantly, Mr. Alston failed to attend three notice depositions. The plaintiff's theme when his counsel stood here was that this is a case about due process and access to the courts. Due process is only about an adequate opportunity to be heard and notice, and those two things are more than abundantly available to plaintiff here. And in fact, the Ball versus City of Chicago case addresses the due process argument that Mr. Epstein tried to make. And it says, due process is afforded where the plaintiff should know the consequences of his action. The record makes it clear that the plaintiff knew or should have known the consequences of his repeated failure and refusal to comply with the discovery rules or Judge Hart's orders. Ball also states that Rule 60B provides, or vitiates rather, that due process argument by providing counsel a chance to come back and correct any errors of fact or of law that the district court judge didn't consider. Mr. Alston didn't do that here. He didn't ask Judge Hart to reconsider his decision. He didn't file a 60B motion. The appellant's brief is full of words like fabrication and prevarication. However, the record doesn't contain anything like that. And in fact, if Mr. Alston really believed that those things had occurred, he should have brought them to Judge Hart's attention so that Judge Hart could have corrected any errors.
And these are things that he's talking about that didn't occur on the record, but the sort of the phone calls or agreements between the attorneys that, well, we can change this or do that. Because that seems to be really an underlying theme, whatever description of the process.
Your Honor, yes, I believe that Mr. Alston is referring to events that he believes occurred or that may have occurred off the record. But they're not part of the record here. They can't be considered, even if we could tell from the appellant's brief what they were. And again, Mr. Alston had a chance to move to supplement the record or to somehow bring other facts, if he felt they were relevant to this matter, into the record, and they're just not there. Your Honors, the notices of deposition that were issued by my office under my name are, according to the advisory committee notes to Rule 37, Section D, issued by the court with the power of the court to compel a deponent to appear. In fact, the advisory committee notes, which are cited in the appellee's brief, put a party at their peril if they ignore it. Judge Hart was convinced, and we filed 3 motions to dismiss on procedural matters alone, that Mr. Alston failed to appear for his depositions. We deposed him once for 3 hours. We had additional time, and were never able to get his re-notice deposition. But Mr. Alston's attorney never filed a motion for a protective order, in fact, never put anything on the record to indicate that he wouldn't show up for the depositions as noticed. The facts of this case are not unlike the case of Hallis versus Consumer Services, where Mr. Hallis was originally deposed for a period of time. He abruptly left the deposition, and when the re-noticed deposition was scheduled, he failed to appear entirely. In that case, this court affirmed the district court's dismissal under Rule 37D, which is one of the arguments advanced by appellees in their brief. That case had other useful information to offer, which is responsive to one of the arguments made by appellant here, and that is that this case was too young. Well, Hallis makes it clear that there's no ripening. A case doesn't have to age a certain time before it can be dismissed for a plaintiff's failure to obey the rules. That case points out that even 6 or 7 month old cases have been dismissed under Rule 37D. Your Honors, I would just point out last that there is no argument in Appellant's brief that response to Mr. Alston's failure to appear for the November 15th deposition is noticed. It's not even addressed in that brief. And pursuant to the cases Allen v. Stewart Ironsides, the Hallis case I just discussed, and a more recent case, Moore v. Doe, all these cases are cited in the appellee's brief, that failure alone would be sufficient under FRCP 37D to justify dismissal without progressive sanctions and without a warning shot, as is discussed in the Ball case. Your Honor, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Counsel, is there anything that you wish to add?
Yes, sir, there is. I would like to point to the Hallis case first and foremost. Counsel cites to that case, and in fact, the Hallis case, I think, is probably guiding to some degree. In that case, discovery was outstanding for 21 months. The plaintiff failed to attend a deposition, was repeatedly rescheduled, which the court ultimately found was willful. There was no finding in this court whether anything was willful. Discovery was extended 3 months due to the plaintiff voluntarily admitted himself into medical testing for remuneration. 2 attorneys went through the matter. The plaintiff ultimately asked for appointed counsel, and there were allegations of a frivolous suit by the defendant. And in fact, in that case, that plaintiff, pro se, was given time to respond to the defendant's motion to dismiss. Much more egregious fact than what we have here.
It all depends upon whether I do look at it through.
And that's true, Judge, and that's also assuming the truth of the facts as alleged. On page 6 of the appellant's brief, it's on the record. The misstatements by counsel, the prevarications, are on the record. He tells the judge, no, Judge, that date was for Carlos Reyes' deposition. That's absolutely not true. Judge Hart made it very clear. He looked at both of us and said, counsel, these dates are in stone. And we walked away from the bench knowing very well that October 11th was for the deposition of the plaintiff. But in fact, he had switched. The defendant tells the judge a complete lie.
The switch was made off the record. That was an agreement, you say.
Yes, the switch was made off the record.
And then they come on the record, as you say, and then say, wait, did make such a switch.
Defendant mentioned nothing about the switch and, in fact, told the judge, no, this judge, this is what you ordered. And, in fact, on page 7, I indicate that. He states, you ordered that as well, telling the judge that he had ordered the first block of what the judge actually ordered. And, of course, what the judge ordered is, as a matter of the transcript, it's in the transcript of the September date, which is in the record. You can look at that yourself and see the counsel has lied to the court. A motion to dismiss where the discovery's 5 days late without a motion to compel. Judge, there's gamesmanship here. This case is being bounced on basis of gamesmanship. His case, Howell supports this. He cites that in his brief. He also cites National Hockey League, the cites in the case, in the brief. 17 months of crucial interrogatories not answered. Several admonitions of the court. There are no admonitions in this case. None. None saying, counsel, you do this again, we'll fine you. We'll dismiss this case in question. Nothing like that. Not even response to the motion to dismiss. We asked for time. Judge, let us have time to respond. Because I wanted to tell the court, Judge, look at what this guy's doing. Well, I didn't get that chance. There are promises and commitment in National Hockey League by the plaintiff. In face of warnings and sanctions, the plaintiff still did not comply with written discovery, did not comply with discovery orders as stated. The district court found bad faith. Your Honor, has no findings of bad faith in this case. We would ask that the matter be reinstated at the least for hearing on this issue, if not reinstated outright. Thank you for your time, Judge.
Thank you, Counsel. We will proceed to case number